Hi everyone. Welcome to the Blind Series Network. It was a gray day in the Portsmouth area. Fort Moncton looked ever so dreary on rainy days. The Secret Intelligence Service cadets had just returned from a long run where they slogged through the mud and wet sand along the beach. The rain was cold and stung when it hit any exposed skin. Sean Atkins decided while in college to pursue a career as a British agent after his mother was killed in an IRA attack. His father, Peter Atkins, had just been elected to the House of Lords. Neither was really related to the other, but the tension in Northern Ireland was intensifying. He merely thought that if he could obtain information to prevent someone else feeling the agony and emptiness of losing their mother, he would be successful. Sean returned from his shower and was laying on the upper bunk of the room he shared with Kent Chapman. He was studying one of his textbooks when a note was slid under the door. His eyes went from the page to the note as it appeared. His first thought was that it was a note for Kent, since Kent and a female cadet had been seeing each other secretly since the beginning of their current training. Sean had endured many a late night of Kent tattling their tales and the insecurity of Kent being caught. He looked at the note once again before determining that it probably was none of his business. He then wondered if it was some kind of test. He looked at the note again. He turned his attention again back to the book. The door opened as Kent was returning from the shower. "What's this?" Kent said as he bent over and picked up the note, closing the door behind him. "Not sure," Sean replied. "I figured it was from Mary." Kent opened the note. "No, it's not from Mary," Kent stated as he read it. He walked over to Sean and handed him the note. "We are to report to the ready room by 1800. Kent walked over to the radiator in the room, placing his wet towel on it to dry. "What do you think this is about?" "I suppose it's the start of the recon test," Sean said, turning the page in the book he was reading. Kent was always amazed that nothing seemed to bother Sean. The recon test was one of the ways CIS weeded out the underperforming and underdesirable candidates. If you failed to return with the proper reconnaissance and the identity of the mole planted, your days at Fort Moncton were numbered. Kent stood in silence, staring at Sean. Sean could sense his roommate's stare. "What?" he asked calmly. "How can you be so calm? It's the recon test, for Christ's sake." Sean closed his book. "We knew this day was coming, Kent. I can't see getting all bent over it." Sean was looking at Kent now. "It's what we've been training for, and frankly, I'm looking forward to getting out of this place and into the field." Sean sat up, swung his legs over the side of the upper bunk, and jumped to the floor. "Besides, this is just a pre-meeting to tell us our mission. We're in Portsmouth. How hard can it be?" "Oh, sure, that's easy for you to say." Kent went to look out the window. "Either way, you'll make it, especially with your father's connections." "Are you saying I will have special treatment?" Sean asked. "Why wouldn't you?" Kent answered. Sean laughed. "Kent, you amaze me sometimes. You've been right by my side the whole time, and to date, I think I have run more kilometers than you, have probably missed more meals because of something I did that required far less punishment. If you fail because you are worried more about where you are going to meet Mary than you did studying, that's not my problem." Kent turned from the window, not sure how to answer that assertion. Sean watched as Kent processed what he had said. Kent put his hands on his hip. After a few more seconds, Kent had to admit, "I suppose you're right." "You don't say," Sean laughed. "You still have a few hours. Hit the books." Sean started for the door. "Where are you going?" Kent asked. "I'm going for a walk, and then I'll get something to eat. I'll meet you in about 45 minutes. "I'll be there," Kent said as he settled into a chair with a book in his hands. Sean disappeared into the hallway. Sean walked around the fort. He had to admit that he really was looking forward to the test. Life at Fort Moncton was grueling, and the attention brought on him because of his father being a member of the House of Lords was something he knew he'd fight every day in the service. His father was not happy with his choice to join CIS. His brother was choosing a life in politics. That was also his father's hope for Sean. While Sean was raised among the political elite, he had no desire to be a politician. He preferred working in the front lines, and his choice to join CIS was cemented during his college years. He smiled at the thought of how he always seemed to bring some sort of information to his father. The information was usually unknown to him. His father, of course, would run it through the proper channels only to discover that it was accurate. Sean had keen abilities to extract information. It was a skill that was recognized by the authorities at Fort Moncton. There was no doubt that today's recontest would be the difficult one. He wandered back to the dining hall just as the doors were opening. He joined his fellow cadets in line. This was something else Sean was looking forward to on the outside. Better food. He walked through the line, selecting only the items he liked. Dinner certainly left a lot to be desired. Sean settled for a salad and some dinner rolls. He was hopeful that he would be able to grab a bite to eat at the test. Kent joined him shortly after he had sat down at one of the many tables. Kent's tray was jammed full of food. Obviously, his palate was not as discerning as Sean's. "No wonder you're wasting away," Kent said, noticing Sean's salad and comparing it to what he had on his tray. All the food groups were generously represented. "I'll grab a bite when we're out tonight," Sean answered. "You're that sure we'll be out on this test this evening?" Kent asked as he started to eat. "Yes," Sean replied. "There's a pattern to this if you were paying attention." Sean began to eat his salad. The two became very pensive, and most of the dinner was spent in silence. The two finished their meal and headed back to the room before the meeting. Although time seemed to drag on, Kent and Sean found themselves walking to the meeting where they were joined by three other recruits. The reconnaissance test was designed initially to determine just how curious a cadet is and how well they can use their training they have been given. Not only does the cadet need to be curious, but must use their training to discern a probable threat. Those around Portsmouth have been engaged with Fort Moncton to help with these recontests. There were a number of citizens who worked on a volunteer basis to help test the cadets. The head of operation would coach the volunteer on the information that the cadet would need to skillfully extract from them. The cadets would return with the information, and the volunteer would also report back to the head of operations. Planting a worker, instructor, or another MI6 agent in the pub in Portsmouth would be too obvious for these cadets. The volunteers had fun with their assignments and took pride in the service to their country. The five cadets entered the meeting room and sat down. All were nervous and were fidgeting in their chairs. When the head of operations finally entered, all the cadets stood up at attention. Instructed to sit and to play close attention, the head of operations gave them their mission. Somewhere in the bar is a person who is looking to join the IRA. The person is not Irish, but is being recruited for their special skills. Intelligence has not been able to provide an identity or what their special skill was. That was the job of these five cadets. There was no list of information they needed to get from the volunteer. The amount of information they would extract was used in the determination of the cadet's readiness to serve. When the head of operations ended the meeting, Sean stood up. The four other cadets sat for a second, thinking there was more to come. Sean followed the head of operations out of the door. He walked to the front door where the transportation had been arranged for them. A few minutes later, he was joined by the other four cadets. "Where you been?" Sean asked Kent as he climbed into the van. "I thought there'd be more information on the objective," Kent said, sitting down next to Sean. Sean smiled. "I thought it was pretty clear." "Glad you did," Kent replied, not amused. The driver of the van started the engine when all five cadets were seated. "So, Henry," Sean called from the back of the van, what are you going to do while we're playing this little game?" "I'm going to have a pint and some good pub food while you are trying to save the world," Henry called back to him. "I wish you all luck tonight." "I do." Luck has nothing to do with it, Sean replied with a smile. He saw Henry's eyes look at him in the rearview mirror. Henry's eyes wrinkled with the smile he gave Sean. The rest of the trip was very quiet. The van pulled up to an old Victorian building on the corner of downtown Portsmouth. Across the street was the harbor. The Duke Public House had seen many sailors in its years of operation. Kent, Sean, and Henry and the others exited the van. Three candidates entered the pub rather quickly. Kent and Henry started to follow them. When Henry realized Sean wasn't following, "Sean," Kent called, "are you joining us?" "I'll be there in a few minutes," Sean answered. "It isn't raining. I want to take a look around." "You know you might be giving us too much of a head start," Kent called back. "I'll take that risk," Sean answered with a smile. Sean walked across the street and took a look over at the docks. He had been here many times over the past few months. He actually found it amusing that the test was being held here. He scouted out many tests when he was able to escape from the fort for a pint and a good meal. He often wondered if there was a clue among the docks that he had missed in his observation of the other tests. He scanned the docks, the boats anchored a little further out in the bay, and nothing seemed out of the ordinary. He looked down the street, then up the street. He noticed a man on a bench who lit up a cigarette. He was an older gentleman, but he seemed out of place. Sean didn't want to stare at the man, but he took notes on his appearance out of the corner of his eyes. He wondered if the man was the person he was supposed to make contact with, or if he was just someone who wanted to lose his sea legs in a quick layover. Scruffy was one descriptor for the man. He sported the boots of a fisherman as well. Anyone could dress like that so that they could blend into the local scene. Sean looked down at his clothes. It was obvious that his clothes said that he didn't belong among the docks. Sean crossed the street and walked into the pub. He walked up to the bar. "Evening," Sean said as he pulled a bar chair back. He looked at the man one chair over. "Are you expecting anyone?" "No," the man answered quickly. He turned his gaze back to the small black and white television located at the back bar among the liquor bottles. "Evening, Sean," the bartender said as he placed a napkin in front of him. "The usual?" "Yes, thank you," Sean replied. "Kathy wouldn't happen to have some fish and chips in the back, would she?" "Ah, she does. I'll let her know you want some." The bartender left to inform his wife. When he returned, he poured Sean a pint. He placed it in front of him. "Your food will be out shortly. I'm sure Kathy will want to see you." He looked at the man to the right of Sean, who was still staring at the television set. "You want another pint?" The stranger pushed his glass to the bartender. "Yeah," the stranger answered harshly. The man's eyes did not leave the television. Sean noticed the man's eyes in the mirror, which was located behind the television and liquor bottles. They were the strangest color, yet a brilliant blue and chilly. He had never seen eyes like that before. The man's eyes were fixed on the television. Sean found it curious that the man was so entranced by the movie that was playing. It was a horror movie featuring a very attractive female protagonist who undoubtedly would be killed or injured. And it was set in a small American town. The music rose, causing the man's eyes to widen, and he almost seemed to salivate as he watched the actors in the film surround her. Sean continued to watch the man as the woman's fate became known to the viewer. She was to be burned alive. The man smiled as the torches were brought to the firewood above the female who was tied to a stake. The man seemed to enjoy the plight of the woman a bit too much, as if he was coming to climax. The television screen faded to black as the flames began to catch the woman's clothes on fire. The credits began to roll. The man wiped his mouth, now drooling, and took a rather long drink of his pipe that the bartender had placed in front of him a few seconds before. Sean looked away from the man. It was not the usual reaction to this kind of horror film. Most would have cringed or looked away, but the man seemed to enjoy it. This is almost too easy, Sean thought. Could this man be the person he was to question? If so, he thought it must be his first time to play this game. Sean looked around the pub at his fellow recruits. They were all engaged in conversation with locals in the bar. Sean knew from his other trips to the pub that they were all barking up the wrong tree. This man was new to the pub. Sean had never seen him before. There was only one other person that Sean didn't recognize, and she was being questioned by Kent. Sean looked at Henry, who was watching all the cadets working on their assignment. He had a smile on his face, and Sean thought that Henry would never survive in the clandestine world. Kathy appeared with Sean's fish and chips, placed them in front of him, and enveloped him in a bear hug. To put it politely, Kathy was twice the size of Sean, and yet her life light made everyone love her. She was gregarious, some would say loud, and she was always welcoming to anyone who came into the pub. Over the years, Kathy became Sean's surrogate mother. When Kathy found out how Sean's mother died, she had decided that a surrogate mother was exactly what Sean needed. In many ways, she was actually correct. The wounds from his mother's murder seemed to soften after many talks with Kathy. There were times when Sean wondered if Kathy was sent to him by his mother. The most interesting aspect to Sean's relationship with his mother was that his mother really favored Jeffrey, his older brother. It seemed that Sean and his mother argued more than they showed affection to one another. Kathy was correct in her assessment that Sean was very much like his mother. When he mentioned it to his father confirmed that Kathy was correct. Sean had inherited a number of his mother's traits, one of them being tenacity, or as Lord Peter Atkins put it, stubbornness. "How's my Sean?" Kathy said in the midst of the hug. "I'm fine," a muffled response came from Sean, whose head was buried between Kathy's shoulder and neck. "For Lord's sake, woman, let the man go before you smother him," Kathy's husband, the bartender, shouted from the other end of the bar. The commotion drew the attention of everyone in the pub. There was a laugh at Sean's expense. When Kathy released the bear hug, Sean's face was red from embarrassment. "How are you, Kathy?" Sean asked in a quieter voice, hoping the others would get back to their conversations. "I'm doing well. But what are you doing here on a Wednesday? Don't you have studying to do?" Sean looked at Kathy and winked. "I missed your wonderful cooking." Kathy laughed as she walked away from him. Her husband waved his hand, calling her to him. She walked behind the bar. He whispered to her, and then she looked at Sean. She surveyed the other occupants at the bar and paused, wondering if anything she had done incriminated Sean in any way. Sean started into his food when Kathy walked away. Everyone was back into their conversations, and the man to Sean's right was now looking at Sean. Sean felt his stare, but did not return it. "You a regular here?" the man grumbled. "Not really. I come in on weekends from time to time," Sean answered. "What are you studying?" the man asked. "Political science," Sean answered. Sean thought it was quite strange to be questioned by this stranger. "How about you? Do you come here often?" "Nah, it's the first time I've been here." It was then that Sean noticed the man's accent. He wasn't British, Scottish, or Irish. He wasn't from Wales either. He couldn't quite place the accent yet. "You enjoying the weather?" Sean asked, indicating that he detected a foreign accent. "It's not quite like the weather at home," the man answered. "We count it as a lucky day when the sun shines," Sean countered back, noting that it had been raining most of the day. "Forgive my forwardness, but I'm guessing you're here from northern Spain, maybe even the Basque region?" The man was impressed by Sean's guess. "Very good, my friend," the man said as he extended his hand. "Severio." Sean wiped his hand on the napkin before accepting the handshake. "Sean." Sean wasn't too happy about using his real name, but he quickly recalled that the bartender had called him by his name. He actually doubted if the stranger provided him with his real name. "How are you familiar with my native land?" Severio asked. I vacationed there once. Due to the unrest, we didn't stay long. What I do remember is how beautiful it is. It must have taken a lot for you to leave. There are fights and disagreements everywhere. There is always work in other areas. Due to the conflict, it's sometimes hard to find a job. Sean knew he had to be careful. If he showed too much interest, the man would become suspicious and possibly leave the pub. However, it was clear that Saverio was dropping a clue. So you're here on business? Here? No, I'm just passing through this town. I'm on my way to Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland? I hope you aren't planning on seeing Belfast. Sean stated. It's a lot of rioting going on there right now. That's exactly where I'm going. I have some friends that I'm meeting there. Well, they obviously haven't told you about the riots, otherwise they would have met you someplace a bit quieter, Sean said, finishing his dinner and wiping his mouth and hands off the napkin. He motioned to the bartender for another drink. My treat, he said to Saverio, pointing to his empty pint. Thank you, Saverio replied. I have a certain expertise that my friends require. The volley between Sean and Saverio continued far into the evening. Most of the other recruits had made their way around the bar, visiting most of the occupants of the bar and gathering what they deemed intelligence. Sean, however, stayed with who he felt was the person of interest. To a degree, he managed to put Saverio at ease, and with each round of drinks, two to every one of Sean's, Saverio began to feel as if he found a friend far from his native land. This was exactly what Sean wanted the man to experience. After a couple of hours, the rest of the group was ready to leave to report their findings. You see, Sean, Saverio started in answer to a question about terrorism, we don't look at people you call innocents as innocents. They are living the life that we are against, so they are targets, just as much or even more than those in uniform. We have to hit them where we know it will do the most damage. Saverio took another drink. My Basque family. We have some knowledge on bomb making that our friends in what is being referred to as the IRA in your country know. I'm not sure my country would be happy to hear you talk about bomb making in the IRA in the same sentence, Sean said, a bit shocked that the stranger was talking as much as he was and what his intentions were. But yes, the IRA is what they are coming to be called. Sean could see Henry was starting to approach him. What about your bomb-making knowledge? Are you going to Belfast to help the IRA bomb someplace? Saverio smiled. I am going to help people who are oppressed, just like my Basque family. They have a need, and I have a need for money. After that, I don't know where my loyalties lie. I may go home, I may go to France, I may stay in Northern Ireland. If they still need my help. Saverio drunkenly slurred many words. Maybe you should come with me. You seem very smart. You would do well. Sean, Henry interrupted. It's getting late, and it's time to go. I'm sorry. Henry genuinely seemed sorry to call this investigation over. Sean, however, didn't understand his sorrow. Sean looked at Saverio. It was quite obvious to Sean that he had acquired all the information he was going to be able to get. He wasn't very happy with what he had gotten. I'll be right there. Sean stood up and called for his bill. You're leaving? Saverio asked. Yes, my friends and I have to return to the university. Sean pulled some cash from his wallet, giving it to the bartender. Tell Kathy good night for me. I will. The bartender went to the cash register as Sean's colleagues and Henry started for the door. Saverio wrestled up as much sobriety as he could and grabbed Sean's arm. We could use men like you in our battles. You're smart. You should join us. Are you sure the IRA wants your services? Sean asked. Yes, the money was deposited into my account. I'm required to be in Belfast tomorrow. You should come with me, Saverio finished his pint. I think we would work really good together. Some other time, perhaps. Sean said as he extended his hand. Saverio, I want to thank you for your time this evening. Sean said, as if he was acknowledging that Saverio was a plant that Sean wants to find. Good night, Good night, Saverio answered him as he watched him walk to the door. I leave at 11 in the morning if you change your mind. I'll swing by this way. If I see you here, then I will be happy to have a friend on my journey. If not, then maybe we will meet again soon. He waved to Sean as Sean opened the door. Sean returned the wave as he walked outside. Sean was the last person to get in the van. He was quiet on the way back, as were the others. Each of them would be called in separately to give the report to the head of operations. Sean couldn't help but wonder if he stumbled onto something accidentally. Some of the conversation was very strange, and his intuition was telling him he would see this man again. They arrived back at the fort. As the cadets exited the van, Henry said to Sean, "Don't take it too hard, mate. There will be other tests." Sean was still perplexed and gave Henry a slight grin. So that wasn't the plant, Sean thought. Then who is he? Who's going in first? Ken asked as they made their way to the head of operations office. No one wants to go first. Why don't you be brave and volunteer, Sean said as they reached the outer door. The head of operations secretary was sitting at her desk. Actually, Mr. Babcock has the order already sorted out. Mr. Atkins has the pleasure of being the first. The rest of you can have a seat. The secretary rose from her chair and opened the door to Babcock's office. Sean, Babcock said as he stood to greet him. The head of operations was very fond of Sean and always looked forward to their conversations. Sean often wondered if it had anything to do with the fact that his father was in the House of Lords and making a play to be appointed to the Joint Intelligence Committee. Come in and have a seat. Sean walked in and moved to a chair that Edward Babcock motioned to. Babcock sat down behind his desk. So, tell me what you were able to determine. Sean paused before answering. Well, I'm not quite sure. I don't think I found your plant, but I did find someone who I think Sis would be interested in tracking. That's interesting. Tell me more. Babcock sat forward, placing his forearms on the desk. I don't know where to start, really. Babcock smiled at Sean's nervous behavior. Just tell me everything you did since you exited the van. Sean swallowed. Well, I thought it looked conspicuous to have all of us enter the bar at once, so I walked across the street to see if something was out of place in the harbor. There were a few new boats, but nothing that struck me as odd. Wait, you've been there before? Babcock asked, surprised. Yes, I've been to that pub many times. I even watched other recon tests. I know the owner quite well. Babcock adjusted his glasses. How did you know? If I told you that, I would have to divulge my source, and that person wouldn't be happy with me. I've known for over a year all the pubs that were used in the test. I've been doing my own intelligence gathering. But begging your pardon, sir, that really isn't important. Babcock smiled. After he thought about it, he should not have expected anything less from Sean. Continue. I noticed a man sitting on a bench, and from his dress, he didn't look out of place. I wasn't sure if you were planning a surprise outside for us after the event, so I wanted to make sure that I wasn't surprised. As it turned out, you were not planning anything like that. We never have done that, but it's an interesting suggestion. Babcock took a note on the pad of paper in front of him. I entered, and everyone seemed engaged with someone, meaning the people involved in the test. Henry was seated at the bar and watching, and I suppose you even asked Henry for his input now that I realize all he does is watch. I moved to the bar as I glanced over the patrons. There was one person I had never seen before, and he was sitting at the bar. Kent was busy with the person we were to determine was the mole, or the plant. I'm kind of disappointed you chose a woman. That is Kent's weakness, really. He went straight toward her and was done in 5 minutes. The rest were talking with the other locals who were regulars at the bar. Sean watched Babcock smile when he was talking about Kent. I suppose I should tell you now that I never talked to the woman. You'll find that Kent received a piece of paper from the woman. It is without a doubt her phone number, unless you gave instructions for the first contact to give some message to the first person that determined that she was the plant. No, you're probably right. It was probably her phone number. Babcock wasn't letting on how amazed he was with Sean's observations. I sat down at the bar after asking the one person I didn't know if he was expecting someone. He briskly answered that he wasn't. I mentioned that I knew the owners, so I was greeted by them by my first name. That was rather unfortunate, but I should have realized that would happen. I was watching this man next to me as he was watching a horror film on the telly in front of him, but across the bar by the liquor bottles. He had the oddest behavior throughout the film. Anytime someone was in danger or killed, or he almost like salivated, drew in an immense pleasure watching it. It was pretty clear he wasn't interested in talking while the movie was playing, so I watched the others by way of the mirror. Kathy, the wife of the bartender and owner, brought out some fish and chips I ordered. It was clear to the gent sitting next to me that I appeared to be a local and frequent visitor of the pub. "That could have backfired on you," Babcock inserted quickly as Sean was about to proceed. "No, Jerry, the bartender, knew what was going on, and he told Kathy. She left me alone for the rest of the evening," Sean said with a bit of a grin on his face when he recalled the bear hug that he had gotten from Kathy, all of which encouraged the stranger with the frigid blue eyes to confide in him. Sean wasn't sure how much more to describe, so he decided to sum up his discussion. "Through our discussion, I discovered this man, who told me his first name was Severio, is from the Basque region of Spain. I don't think that Severio is his real name. He was too forthcoming with the information. He told me he is headed to Belfast in the morning, leaving at 11 o'clock, actually, to meet some of his friends in the IRA. His friends need assistance with bomb making, one of his many attributes. It seems the IRA and the Basque ETA are exchanging information now." Babcock's mouth dropped open at his information. He sat in shock for a minute, unable to comprehend what Sean had just divulged. "Sean, are you saying that this man is on his way to join the IRA?" "Yes, I think I just said that," Sean replied. "So in summary, sir, I didn't find and question the person you wanted me to find, although I did identify her. I do believe that this information would be information that CIS and maybe MI5 would be interested in having. I can identify the man. His most notable feature is his most icy, frigid, cold blue eyes I've ever seen. They are even more striking because of his tan and black hair." Babcock was taken aback. He thought that the evening would be boring as they usually were, because he knew all the answers. This was totally unexpected, and he knew it was intelligence that needed to be passed on to the home office. "Sean, I'd say you passed a quite different test, and you passed it with flying colors." Sean breathed a sigh of relief. "I wasn't quite sure what you were going to do. As the mission was described, I certainly didn't meet those objectives." "No, on the contrary, you identified the correct person through your previous surveillance. You've shown me that you're quite ready to move on in your work." Babcock stood up. "We will need to pass this information along. What time did you say Severio was it?" "Yes." "What time did you say he was leaving?"
11 in the morning," Sean replied.
"Yes, well, we'll need to get instruction and surely some agents up here to track him." "If I may, sir, he invited me along on his journey. He said if I changed my mind to join him by 11, I'd like to request that I do just that. He doesn't suspect I'm an agent or anything." Babcock looked at Sean. "Why would he trust an Englishman?" "It might be because I made a few comments that I wasn't very happy with the way things were being handled in Ireland," Sean answered sheepishly. "I wouldn't pass that on to my father." Babcock laughed. "I doubt it would be the first time that you do that to keep your cover. You didn't tell him your last name, did you?" "No, just first names were exchanged," Sean smiled. "So an alias can be created. At least, I'll always answer to Sean." Both men gave a little chuckle, as uncomfortable as it seemed to them. "Wait outside while I quickly hear what the other candidates have to say. In the meantime, I'll have my secretary get the necessary folks together for us to talk on the telephone." Babcock walked around his desk and led Sean to the door of the office. "Great work, Sean." He opened the door and asked the secretary to step in for a second.
She returned to her desk and sent another candidate in to Babcock's office for their review. She then began to make several phone calls. The other cadets weren't paying much attention, many of them sitting with their eyes closed, their lips silently moving as they recanted what they observed and the information they obtained. Sean sat quietly, watching the secretary as she made calls requesting time for the director and the assistant directors of CIS. One by one, the candidates were sent into Babcock's office. When they were finished, they left the office for the comfort of their rooms. Kent was the last candidate sent into the office. After a short time, Kent's session finished. The door still open to Babcock's office when Kent said, "You must be in a lot of trouble, Sean. I never would have thought that you would have failed this test. You made no contact with anyone except that drunk at the bar. How could you think he was the plant?" Kent seemed genuine enough, but Sean could tell there was some kind of superiority or satisfaction Kent was receiving in what appeared to be Sean's failure. Sean shrugged. "I guess my hunches were wrong." "That'll be all, Kent. I'll deal with Mr. Atkins," Babcock said, now realizing that Sean had kept all of his findings to himself. This, of course, was another trait of a mature agent. Babcock waited until Kent was out of the room before he called Sean back into his office. "I see you didn't confide in anyone else what you discovered tonight."
"No, sir," Sean confirmed. A buzzer rang off on the telephone on Babcock's desk. He depressed the button to hear his secretary announce that the parties were waiting online.
He thanked his secretary and told her she could now retire to her room located within the fort. Babcock pushed the speaker button and identified Sean as being in the room. He then asked Sean to tell the gentleman on the other end of the phone what he had discovered. Sean focused his comments on the discussion scenario and he had in a short summary. When Sean finished, there was silence on the other end. Finally, the director of CIS spoke up. "Ed, you know I can't get agents up there by 11. "Might I suggest Sean go?" Babcock asked. "He'd be fresh out of training. Do you think he's ready?"
"Yes," Babcock answered. "Besides, you have agents in Belfast. Get word to one of them to befriend Sean. He'll have to use a code word so that Sean knows it is someone he can trust."
"Obviously," an assistant director answered. "Sean, your father isn't going to like this."
"There isn't much my father does like about my choice in occupation, sir," Sean said, smiling. He knew now that one person on the other end of the phone was Jack Kensington, an old friend of the family and an assistant director at CIS.
"What's the code word, Sean?" Jack asked.
"I suggest having them ask me how Bridget is," Sean said, referring to his mother.
"I'll respond with dead, thanks to a stray bullet from a British gun. That should aid in the story. I'm disillusioned with how the British are handling Northern Ireland."
"I'll do that."
"What last name are you going to use?" Jack asked.
"McBride," Sean answered.
"That seems to be very fitting for the son of Bridget McBride," Jack answered. "Good luck, Sean. It'll be a couple of days before someone will make contact with you. Make sure you have my home phone. If you get into any trouble, call me directly. The last thing I want is to lose you or your father's friendship." There was a pause. "Oh, and welcome to CIS."
Sean smiled at Babcock, who smiled back.
"Congratulations," Babcock said as he extended his hand for Sean to shake. Sean accepted his hand and smiled again. "Thank you all."
"If that's all, Ed, I think I'm going to go head to bed now," Jack stated.
"Yes, sir. Thank you for all your time," Babcock said. "Good night."
"Good night, Jack," Sean added. Most responded with a good night or good luck as the line went dead.
"If I may offer one piece of advice before you go, Sean?"
"Only one."
"When you're addressing Jack Kensington in a work situation, I suggest you might want to call him Mr. Kensington. Agents at your level aren't on a first-name basis with an assistant director of CIS." Babcock smiled. "I'm afraid there's no fancy graduation for you. You better pack your things. I'll have Henry drop you in town. Think you can find a place to stay for the rest of the night?"
"That won't be a problem. What are you going to tell the others?"
"You mean Kent?"
"Well,
we might as well stick to the story that you failed the test. I was so disappointed that I expelled you." Babcock walked with Sean to the door of his office.
Kent will like that story, Sean said, joining him in a short laugh. I'll get my bag packed. Have Kent send what I don't take back to my father's home.
Babcock opened the office door and shook Sean's hand. I'll do that. Be careful and keep that curiosity, but keep yourself protected.
You are the best cadet I've ever seen here, Sean. I know you'll do very well.
Sean acknowledged the parting words of the head of operations at Fort Moncton. Sean had to admit that he wasn't going to miss the dreary, drab buildings of the complex or the food. He returned to his room to find Kent full of questions. Sean stuck to the script that he was expelled, flunking the test, and that he was leaving the fort immediately. He packed a bag of clothes and headed to meet Henry in front of the residence. Getting into the van, Henry was smiling at him.
What? Sean asked as he closed the door.
Oh, nothing, Henry started. It's just that Mr. Babcock suggested I give you this Beretta.
Henry handed him the gun wrapped in a handkerchief. It's the one you use when you shot your perfect score at the target practice.
Sean freed the gun from the cloth to look at it.
Thank you, Henry. It's not going to do me much good without bullets, though.
Check behind the seat, Henry said as he pulled the van away from the building. Henry drove to the outskirts of Portsmouth. Sean asked him to stop the van. Sean wanted to walk into town so as not to be seen. He found a little inn just down the way from the pub. He finally managed to get to sleep in the wee hours of the morning. By 10:30 in the morning, he was standing on the corner waiting outside the pub. He was starting his life as an agent, the life he always wanted to lead since the murder of his mother. The intention he set years earlier was now manifesting. He tried to calm the excitement within him. All those thoughts disappeared when Saverio greeted him from the car that rolled up to him.
It's good to see you, my friend.
Now we will go join the fight for freedom.
Next character that we'll actually read a prequel short story on, will be Bobby Jenkins, Senator Jenkins. And he is actually, we join him as he is going through Hell Week to become a Navy SEAL. So until next time, this is Linda Riesenberg-Fissler saying goodbye, and thank you for listening to the Blind Series Network.